But it is certainly an appropriate time for us here as we wrap up the month of September to welcome back to the show our good friend Beth Clay, who's with the new Mental Health Connection. She joins us on the Settlers Bank phone line. Beth, welcome back to Fresh Take.
Thank you so much, Josh. Good morning.
Good morning. It is great to hear from you. And I am delighted to have you with us here as we wrap up September, which means we're also wrapping up Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. We talked a little earlier this month with someone from your team about suicide and the trends that we've been seeing. And so we're going to take some more time to talk about this. We're going to talk about sort of the political season that we're living in, Beth, after last night's stunning, rip-roaring debate that might be causing people to feel some anxiety and some stress and maybe even some distress. We're going to talk a little bit about how to cope with that. We'll also talk about screening and treatment for mental health issues, what that means and what options are available. But I want to start, Beth, with the big question that I've had associated with mental health issues for many years now, and that is the effort to reduce stigma. In our local news chat earlier, Karen Schneider told us about a quote you gave her for a piece in the Oshkosh Herald talking about the availability of mental health services, but people's sometimes reluctance or unwillingness to go and pursue and utilize the services that are available. Is that reluctance a product of stigma? Are those two things related, do you think?
Yes, they absolutely have a relationship, but I think we're in really interesting times right now, Josh, where so many more of us are experiencing things like depression and anxiety in this time of COVID-19. And when more of us are experiencing it, the stigma of mental health challenges starts to fade, because if we can't kind of other those people, you know, that have mental health challenges, it becomes us or our kids or our colleagues. And honestly, if any generation was going to overcome stigma, it is Generation Z. The school-age kids right now, what research is showing us is that they are experiencing more mental health challenges than any generation before them, but they are seeking treatment more regularly than any generation before them. They talk about it a lot amongst themselves in casual conversations, about my therapist said this, or my medication, you know, I got to take my pill at 12, and things like that, that really work to fight against the sense that it's somehow a personal weakness or character flaw that is a mental health challenge, instead of just being what it is, which is our physical health is tied to our mental health, and we have good days and bad days with all of our health.
Yeah, and I can definitely attest to my own struggles recently with feelings of anxiety and depression as we get back to something approaching normal. And now I'm back to talking to you from my living room, Beth. And I'll tell you, when that decision came down earlier this week, I struggled. When I came home on Monday, I really did struggle with just keeping a positive mindset. And what am I really facing here? And is this going to be 2 weeks or 2 months or who knows how long? And those struggles are something we can all relate to. And so while we don't want more people to struggle, that widespread experience of the struggle with mental health is something that can help us regularize or normalize that other people are doing it too, and maybe help us to reduce that feeling of stigma that goes along with it.
Yeah, and this sort of feeling like we're boomeranging back into somewhere we were in March is causing challenges for everybody, because our resiliency is waning as time goes on. We're less able. So in March, we rallied. You know, everybody was like, yep, we're staying home and the kids are home and we're figuring it out. And the energy that we had to do that with this sort of second wave is not there. And the feelings that come with it, Jeff, that was so appropriate what you said about how it feels to be moving back into this, or how it feels for school-age kids who were able to start the year in a hybrid model but are now heading back home. And for children, that comes out as questions like, what did I do wrong? What did we do wrong that this is happening? And lots of kinds of uncomfortable, destabilizing feelings that we have to process in order to go through what we're going through right now. The pandemic has brought with it this perfect storm of increasing risk factors like isolation, uncertainty, and unemployment, while we also have decreasing protective factors like not having access to our close relationships, our resiliency that's waning, routine that we're used to, and that's requiring all of us to keep our hearts and our eyes open to our families and neighbors and colleagues to watch for distressing signs.
That is so important that we can play that role of early alert system to say, hey, you seem to be acting a little differently. Is there something going on you want to talk about? I'm happy to listen. Those kinds of opportunities to reach out and give someone the chance to share what they're experiencing, that's really one of the best things we can do for our loved ones at this time of such stress and anxiety.
That's exactly right. And I find when we sort of just ask that simple question of how are you, the answer now is far more meaningful than maybe it's ever been because we're having this collective anxiety experience together. And for a long time, when people would ask me that, I would say, I'm COVID okay, which is not the same as okay, okay. It's
right.
Okay in the time of all of the anxiety and distress that's happening in COVID-19.
Yes, I think some people might capture that with good considering. Right. And just leave it at that. Beth, one of the things I want to talk about before we have to take our first break here is this notion of toxic positivity. At a time when we're all challenged, especially when those challenges are somewhat amorphous, it's not something we can confront or put our hands on. It's just sort of floating around us. There's this temptation to force ourselves into a positive mindset. Talk to me a little bit about what this notion of toxic positivity means to someone who works in the mental health field.
Well, I have to tell you, I really love the campaign, It's Okay to Not Be Okay, because it acknowledges the real human experience. We are not always feeling good because we're constantly choosing how to feel in the face of our experiences, our relationships, and our circumstances. The culture of painting the world pink or addressing someone's pain by saying that they aren't being grateful enough is what causes people to keep their pain secret and locked inside. And we really need to build a culture that acknowledges pain and struggle, that teaches us how to share that pain and struggle to lessen it, and that empowers us to use real coping skills to address and overcome real adversity. This is one of the reasons that we chose to do the Sources of Strength program as our strategy for addressing the mental health of our youth. Rather than painting everything pink, the program's foundation is that life is hard and you will struggle. So prepare yourself by knowing your sources of strength. Build the ones that you don't have in your life yet and use the ones that you do to face the real adversities in life.
So Beth, that is an approach you're helping to teach young people of, yes, it is going to be difficult. Expect that there will be struggles and setbacks, but be prepared to call on your sources of strength. Is that something that adults and older people can do too?
Oh, absolutely. The you can find the Sources of Strength wheel on the New Mental Health Connection website, and I highly recommend looking at that to kind of assess where you are as we move into this kind of distressing continuation of our time to see what is it that I have already in place to rely on, and if I'm teetering, what strength can I borrow from someone who loves and cares about me, or even borrow from a professional if that's what we need?
Very helpful there. And for folks who are interested in learning more, you can find that at newmentalhealthconnection.org. newmentalhealthconnection.org. Lots of great resources there. We're talking with Beth Clay, who heads up the New Mental Health Connection. And when we come back after our break, we are going to dive into the red, white, and blue elephant in the room, which is the election and the political climate, and how that can contribute, even in ways that we may not realize, to the anxiety and stress that we're feeling. I've got a t-shirt that screams it, 2020 is the worst. Is it really about the year, or is it about how we approach it? We're going to talk about that with Beth Clay. And then later on, we'll talk about some of the treatment options and what screening is like for finding out what kind of treatment might be helpful for those who may have some struggles. We're going to talk about all of that as we wrap up Suicide Prevention Awareness Month here on September 30th with Beth Clay from the New Mental Health Connection. Stay tuned. We'll be back with all of that when Fresh Take continues here on WHBY. Dave Edwards told you earlier about a closure of Wisconsin Highway 76 southbound at Spencer Road. The Outagamie County Sheriff's Department tells us that is now open. All lanes are clear and open on 76 southbound at Spencer Road following a crash earlier there. All open on Highway 76. Welcome back to Fresh Take. In about 10 minutes, we're going to talk about screening and treatment in support of mental wellness. But right now, we just need to survive 2020. We're talking about it with Beth Clay from the New Mental Health Connection as we wrap up September, Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, focusing in on mental health. Beth, it's been a few years in a row now that it feels like our political culture is throwing a lot at us. Now, not everybody is as consumed with politics as I am. I recognize that. But even those who aren't consumed with it daily are probably feeling the effects of the anxiety and stress created by our politics. Is that something that you can pick up in conversations with people? Can you, from your perspective, tell us, is politics contributing to some of the mental health struggles that we're seeing in our community?
I wish I could say no, Josh. but I would say, you know, when we think about what we saw last night, it was not the best of humanity. And yeah, that takes a toll on all of us. I highly recommend what I call a new fast and a hiatus from social media, because it's honestly like drinking toxic waste from a fire hose and then wondering why you have a stomach ache.
Oh, I love that analogy, Beth.
We need to find ways to move away from politics as a topic of our regular conversations. We have enough distance between us right now, just from the virus, that creating more distance when we really need closeness is really not productive. I also remember a time when I didn't really know what the political party of other people were. Like, I didn't know that, you know? And I'm choosing to be on a need-to-know plan with the people in my life, and guess what? I don't need to know.
That is so important right there. That is so important. To put that in perspective, do you really need to know this? Is it important to what we're dealing with? If not, maybe set it aside for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, and I think there, if you are going to open yourself up to that and you want and need to stay informed, there are ways to move that toxicity through and out of your body. Hard exercise can help move difficult feelings through and out of your body and brain. Things like limiting the amount of time and exposure. So give yourself a 20-minute window to think about, talk about, react to political issues of the day, and then close that door and spend the rest of your day on other things. That can be really a helpful technique, is just limiting it. And as far as the news fast goes, it's easier or it's less impactful to read news than it is to watch it, because you can regulate how much is coming in. And I would suggest only looking at news once a day, like I said, and not sort of letting it every time the radio comes on, every time you turn the TV on, every time you open Facebook. That is definitely going to have a negative impact on your mental health.
I love that advice that you offer there, Beth, of really being mindful of how much you're consuming and what kind of news you're consuming, because it's not all made equal. And the different platforms, right, the different approaches and tones in the news coverage can have different effect on your reaction to it. That advice about hard exercise, working these feelings through your body, my trainer will be happy to hear you sharing that advice, Beth, because I have been slacking in that regard recently. But I want to go to one more piece of this. It's one thing to, you know, compartmentalize our news consumption or take a hiatus from social media. All of that would be good to do. Sometimes this comes in the form of personal relationships, people that we are close to who just will not let this stuff go. Is there anything we can do to try and remedy or save those relationships that are really being tested by political differences?
Well, yes. Let me just start by saying, of course, there are times where a relationship becomes unsustainable because it's abusive or unhealthy. And share and let others help you and support you if you need to end a relationship. So that's just first and foremost. But
yes.
Outside of that, research really shows us that neither you nor I are going to change our minds based on your political rants about my preferred party or candidate. And the technique that I like to fall back on is to remind myself not to plant seeds in the sand. If the other person is not fertile ground for a real conversation, then don't take the time to plant seeds there. Also, sometimes in order to keep a loving relationship with a relative, in order to preserve that, we have to block their content from our Facebook feed. We do that in order to not lose those relationships, to maintain the positive regard that we have for each other from deteriorating. And that really can be an appropriate technique. I just need to not know what you're thinking about right now. And I think we need to fall back on all of the critical things that we learned from Mr. Rogers and in kindergarten about using the golden rule and how we communicate with each other matters. It says much more about you than the other person. If you're sharing your less humanitarian side.
Yeah. Such good advice, Beth. So many important reminders there. You know, there was that series of books, Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten.
Yes.
It does seem like there's something to that adage, I'll have to say. And this moment is really showing that again and again in so many different ways. Such good advice there. Beth Clay is with the New Mental Health Connection, helping us to reduce the negative mental health impact of the stress and anxiety of the world that we are living in right now. When we come back, we're going to look ahead a bit. Yes, we are wrapping up September today, and that is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. But coming up in a little over a week, it's National Depression Screening Day. What is screening, and what kind of treatment options might it lead to? We're going to talk about that with Beth when we return with more here on Fresh Take. You're listening to WHBY. I gotta unmute myself at home too. Fresh Take is brought to you by Hooper Law Office. Call Sarah Kahns and Peter Harbach at 920-250-9959 for your elder law and estate planning needs. Hooper Law Office, providing a pathway to your legacy. Even at home, so many buttons I have to remember to press. And welcome back to Fresh Take. I'm your host, Josh Duclo. Yes, coming to you from my living room with conversations to get you thinking, not to tell you what to think. And in this segment, we are thinking about the latest methods for promoting mental wellness with Beth Clay from the New Mental Health Connection. Beth, we are wrapping up September Suicide Prevention Awareness Month and looking ahead to October 8th, National Depression Screening Day. What is screening when it comes to mental health and wellness? What should people expect, and who should think about scheduling a screening?
So thanks so much for that, Jeff. We're also having Mental Illness Awareness Week as the first full week in October, and that includes October 8th, which is National Depression Screening Day. Screening is not diagnostic. It's not going to tell you for sure which mental illness or whether you have a mental illness. But it offers you kind of a fork in the road to say, yep, what I'm experiencing here is more than what I can manage on my own, or nope, you know, I'm challenged, but I'm doing okay. And that's why they're really helpful, because most of us don't walk around knowing all of the diagnostic criteria for different mental illnesses. We just know how we feel and how we're thinking and how we're behaving. And that's what screening looks for. It's typically a really informal process. There are lots and lots of anonymous medical screening tools that are online that you can take. In fact, we have what I consider to be some pretty gold standard ones on our website. But it's used to say how intense is it and for how long. And that's really the criteria that lets us know whether we need professional help to get us back to the other side.
That's really key there. I did not know that. That screening is not diagnostic. The point of screening is not, Beth, to tell you what specific ailment or affliction you might be experiencing. The purpose of screening is to answer some questions to figure out if more attention, more consideration is needed, if you need to look further. Is that the idea?
That is absolutely the idea. And so okay. You can imagine, you know, a lot of times your primary care physician will do different screenings with you if you're having, a change in behavior, thoughts, or feelings. And that's how it works. So even the screening tools that we have online, there's one that is sort of like, I'm not sure what's going on with me. I just don't feel right. And there are screening tools that are, you know what, I think I'm really anxious right now, and you can take one for anxiety. There's even a screener on there that looks at just your well-being, which is a really interesting screening tool. It's a strength-based approach. There's an ability to take a screener, an adult to take a screener on behalf of a team that they're worried about. Or we have full youth screening tools assessing the many challenges that are experienced by kids online. And I think about all the stressors that are on our teachers, parents, frontline workers, newly unemployed people, where a screening might really be helpful in deciding how to spend this time and whether you need that additional support. I mean, the great thing is that treatment works when people access treatment, and recovery is possible for everyone. And I think a lot of times that message gets lost, or the idea that if I need treatment, that's already a failure. And we really need to turn that kind of thinking around.
That is such an important point, that idea that if I need help, that is proof that I have failed. That sort of goes back to that idea of stigma, where we're supposed to feel bad about these situations we find ourselves in, though it is not necessarily through any fault of our own. So you mentioned treatment there, Beth. Talk to us a little bit about what treatment looks like. What are some of the range of treatments that are out there?
Sure. Well, I can tell you there is a spectrum of treatment for mental health challenges that is far wider than any of us in the general population probably know about. Most of us know about outpatient or inpatient, but there are differences in the frequency and intensity of services at a mid-level, like something called intensive outpatient or short-term solution-focused therapy or partial hospitalization, which are mid-levels of care that come between outpatient and inpatient. And we live in an amazing resource-rich community. We've talked about that many times, Josh. There are lots of non-talk therapies, things like transcranial magnetic stimulation therapy for depression, which is super effective, and St. Eve's is working on being able to offer that. There's exposure response prevention treatment for OCD specifically. There are lots of techniques that improve mental health indirectly, like mindfulness, exercise, meditation, hypnotherapy, self-compassion, journaling. There are far more treatment options than most people know about. And unfortunately, most of us enter the mental health system of care in crisis. That's one of the things I really, really love to change in our community, is that we recognize challenges earlier on so we can access the treatment at a level where there's far more capacity. That's why screening is really helpful, because it's sort of early on. It's not something we do in a crisis. In crisis, we're looking at, you know, diagnosis and treatment. But when we're just not right, when we're just unwell, when we don't feel like ourselves, when we're drinking more than we should, and we know we are, that those are really the times to get help, because we have so much capacity in the mental health system of care at that point.
I am fascinated to hear about the wide range of treatments that are out there, because I think, like most people, I think about talk therapy, which, you know, you're talking to a counselor, a therapist about what you're experiencing. And then I think about pharmaceuticals. Are pharmaceuticals still seen as part of most treatment options when it comes to mental health, Beth?
Well, what I would say, research shows that the most effective treatment for mental health issues is medication and therapy combined.
I like it
to say that the meds clear the fog so you can do the work of therapy. And that's how they kind of partner together, because a lot of times when if something has brought us to therapy, we were unwell in some way. And usually what's happened is that, you know, our brain isn't functioning the way that it normally does, because our brain is the greatest pharmacy in the universe. When it's working well, it can release unparalleled antidepressants and anti-anxiety chemicals into our system. Sometimes when we're unwell, our brain needs some extra support to remember how it works when it's well.
Man, that is so, so interesting, Beth. I wish we had a whole other segment just to dive in on this stuff, and I may need your help in finding someone to talk more about the way that therapy and pharmaceuticals can work together to help people rediscover how their brains work when they're working well. I think that's another important way to talk about that. Last thing here about non-medicinal approaches, things we can do proactively to try to improve our mental health and well-being. Things, you know, you mentioned that heavy workout that I need to get back to. What about things like food and socializing and other things? What are some of the things we can do on our own to try to improve our mental health?
Right. So, you know, it's not like we don't know the answers to that. We need to eat better. We need to get the right amount of sleep. We need to exercise. All of those things are not, you know, we already know those things. But what are some of the other kinds of things that can be helpful in this time? We need to make sure that physical distancing is not relationship distancing, because social connection is critical to being a human being that is well. And going for months with no hugs has real consequences. And so if I could say one thing for everybody to do is to find a way to connect with loved ones, with friends, with someone you haven't spoken to in a long time, anybody, and to create that sense of not being alone. I think that's really, really important. I would also help people to plan one thing per week to look forward to. You know, hold a family Zoom happy hour or game night, something that there is to look forward to, because there's so much distressing news along the way that we really need that hope. And I would say we're entering this time, this season, where it's getting dark at 4 o'clock.
Yes.
And you need to prepare for that. You need to start turning on your light at about 4 o'clock, so that your home does not darken when the sun goes down.
So many things there that we can do to try and help improve our mental well-being when we are facing so many challenges all at the same time. Beth, you really have given us a lot to think about, and I'll be taking some actions, I guarantee it, because I don't want to fall behind on this. And I encourage others to be honest and candid with yourself and with your loved ones about those moments where you are feeling the struggle. Consider taking one of the screening tools and talking to someone about how you're feeling. It can and will help. Recovery is possible for everyone. Treatment works, and we have, as Beth said, a very resource-rich community. This is the place, if you're looking for help, this is the place to be, because you can find it. And we thank you, Beth Clay, so much for helping us learn so much over the past many years, not just today, but for so long. I've learned so much from you, and it's from great conversations like this. We really appreciate you and everyone from your team at the New Mental Health Connection sharing your knowledge and supporting our community. Thanks so much, Beth.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
We'll do it again soon.